Here we go.
My brother warriors. Might shall be the wrath they feel upon our assault. Arm yourselves well, brother warriors, and steel your righteousness. Gird yourself for holy combat and go forth.
Now, your host, the Librarian.
Welcome back, brothers, to another episode of Fight Night, where we talk about Warhammer, Warhammer 40K, and the Games Workshop hobby. We're here again live with Global Smacker Jeff, however you know him on the boards. And we're going to sit down and talk a little bit about the hobby with him, how the Ordo Fraternitas is doing, one of the many chapters that the Fight Club has, and about one of their new campaigns they've got coming up. They've got some dynamic things happening with it. How you doing tonight, Jeff?
Super, Jerry. How you doing?
Hanging in there. It's been an early morning already, but I'll survive it, I think.
I'm already on my 10th cup of coffee.
Yeah, I've stopped drinking coffee a long time ago, but I'm thinking I'm going to have to start again. Get back into the caffeine routine.
Hey, 2 liters of Mountain Dew, cups of coffee, doesn't matter.
Any way you get it, right?
Exactly.
So the last time we talked, we had an interesting episode, but how's the Ordo Fraternitas been doing over the last year?
Back to that episode, I was looking through the history on iTunes, and that was, in fact, the least downloaded episode of the podcast.
Well, you know, that's interesting, but on iTunes, it doesn't, because I also give a link directly to the blog on the forums itself, I've noticed that people aren't going to iTunes to get it. So that's creating kind of a statistics problem for me, because I can't actually figure out how many people are downloading and such.
To be honest, I just stream it by whatever link you post. I don't go to iTunes.
Yeah, see that, and that I don't get those hits.
I mean, I can go get my iPod out of the car, you know, sync it with iTunes and download it that way, and take 2 hours to do it, or I can just stream it.
Right, right, and you know, for what it's worth, I'm not too interested in the stats because I'm not trying to make money off this. Only those that are trying to build the advertising stuff.
Sure, sure. I get it. Anyways, you really don't want to know how bad it actually is in real life anyways, right?
Exactly, exactly.
You want to actually think there's 10 people listening to it.
Right, when I probably know it's just me listening to it over and over and over again.
Exactly. They're definitely not unique downloads.
Having all my family listen to it just so I can get the hit.
So anyways, it's no surprise now the Ordo Fraternitas has another campaign getting ready to kick off. This one's called The Hunt for Jander Hope. It's a little different this time. We're got a huge presence on Facebook that we're doing it on, and a little smaller following on Twitter. We're trying to hit the social media outlets. The Facebook has been pretty impressive how the feedback we've gotten from it so far.
Yeah, certainly. One of the nice things I like is someone actually developed a Facebook page for their army.
Yes, that would that was Tiny on the boards, I think, Aaron Short.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
So what's the intent to use Facebook behind this? I've always wondered if something like that could actually get pulled off.
The thought behind the Facebook movement was, you know, we've always appealed to our, you know, true hardcore audience on the Fight Club. But it was hard to grow past that. I mean, we know gamers by nature are a lazy bunch, and you know, the guys that aren't really hardcore into it and that are willing to go to, you know, a separate forum and discuss things and be an active member, we never really could reach out to those guys. But with Facebook, I mean, probably if you saw 10 people today, probably 8.5 of them have a Facebook account.
Right.
So, people are already there, so.
Why not go to them?
We would think that, you know, you get a campaign update on your Facebook feed, you're already there, you know, seeing what your buddies are doing tonight or, you know, playing your different application games. So, it just seemed like a logical movement to go that route. And, like I said, we've got a lot of new members. that probably didn't know what the 40K Fight Club was, and just a lot of early excitement. I'm excited for it myself.
Very cool, very cool. So yeah, it kind of reminds me a lot of the old Yahoo groups that we used to use. It used to force the posting and everything to the players, then, you know, they're already in email. You get the club update, you get the campaign update, it's right there for you, you can reply. Like replying to an email. And forums, while they're cool, it does require someone to have some motivation and actually go to them.
Yeah, actually, when I was setting everything up, it actually reminded me of the old Yahoo groups, and it's almost the same, and we actually had to set up a Gmail address for the campaign to get some way to get results, just because Facebook is a little limited in that there's only so much room in a post that you could do, and then you got to navigate through the page to find them. So we did have to set up an email. It's huntforjanderhope@gmail.com. So yeah, it's like the old days a little bit, maybe a little more advanced than we were back then, but not by much.
So what? So you don't think? So are you going? Are we going to be able to see updates for the campaign on the Fight Club site, or are we going to have to go to the Facebook?
I got to talk to the Primarchs to see if maybe we'll have a little separate area for it, or we'll just do it in a campaign area. I would think that it would be limited on the Fight Club just for the fact that not everybody in the campaign is on the Fight Club. So to force them to go to Facebook, to Twitter, to separate email, back to the Fight Club. We also got the 40K Armageddon blog involved in it, just because we got to have somewhere to have the information at, you know, like rules packs and post pictures. I mean, you can do that on Facebook, but again, it's very limited. And so we're using all kinds of avenues to get the information out there to kind of appeal to everybody.
So there are two things about this campaign that I want to talk about. I mean, campaigns are kind of a nerdy thing for me to like to dive into. I like to understand how people think when they're building them and how they go about to build the point structure and so forth. The first question I've got then is this a story-based campaign or is this a map-based campaign?
It's definitely story-based. While there is a map, and the map's in the rule pack, it really doesn't play into the actual gameplay. I mean, basically how this is going to work is there's going to be 4 play periods. And everybody will have a scheduled opponent that they have to play during those 2 weeks for each period. Pickup games beyond that are more than acceptable and encouraged. And basically, each play period will fight over a position on the map. It's not really, there's no significance really to holding areas on the map, except we're going to end this with a large apocalypse game. So the 5th and final period will be just one APOC game where the winners of the different areas along the way will get a small perk in the game, you know, like something like as simple as, you know, you hold this position, you go first, or, you know, you get a orbital bombardment before the game starts. That's not all worked out all the way yet, but that's kind of how it's going to work.
So so stripping back the curtain and seeing the man behind it a little bit, it's the story is going to progress. You fight your battles, but it's going to end the same way no matter who wins or loses. It's just kind of a game flavor to it.
Yes, I mean, the goal is to, you know, it's the hunt for Jander Hope, the rogue governor of Genius. So we're going to get to him and we're going to fight, you know.
The point's to play the game.
Exactly. So there's not going to be an instance where, okay, you can't reach the, you know, the hive of Nadar. It's we're going to get there and we're going to fight, and whoever wins, wins at that point.
Right. Just how badly beaten are the good guys when they get there?
Exactly.
How behind the power curve. So, I noticed when I read the storyline that this is somewhat tied into the Gallus Crusade storyline a little bit, which has always been a trademark of your campaigns. You like to build upon one story from another.
Well, it's just we have so much history in the area from the Anorak stuff and the Gala stuff. It's just to give people. I mean, they have the same armies, they have the same fluff. It's the way to tie it all together. You know, just throw a little bone to the guys that invested a lot in the old stuff, and you know they can build histories with us as we go.
It's very cool because it's almost becoming like Fight Club now has its own place in the 40K background, its own mythos, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely. It's and that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Switching gears a little bit, what have you been doing in the hobby? What's been getting you going?
To be honest, in the last month, I've kind of stalled out here. You know, I was going crazy there for a while doing conversions. I got Dark Angel stuff. With the Gallus Crusade coming to an end, it kind of killed my Dark Angel drive for a while. I got a Fellblade, which is a Astartes Baneblade variant from pre-Heresy times. It's probably about 90% complete, and I just totally stalled out on the project. But I'll get back to it. I see it on my game table in the basement, and so I just need to jump on that thing and put 10 hours on it and knock it out.
Right. Well, sure enough, we'll see with the campaign. You'll get geared up again and knock that thing out.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I got going with the guard stuff. Painted a lot of tanks with the... We went probably 6 months where we were just doing APOC every weekend. And so I had to bring my guard army up to speed. And I probably added 15 tanks to it of different variants.
So let's talk about that, too, the Apocalypse games. I see that, now it's no secret, you and I both love Apocalypse. It's a great game system, great way to play the 40K, get all your models on the table. And all that good stuff. But talk a little bit about the rules that have come up with, the way you're playing it versus the way the books and so forth give you the loose structure. How has that affected the way to play Apocalypse?
In my opinion, it has it's enhanced the experience. I mean, dude, it's no surprise that an expansion comes out. It usually means it's the end of an edition. They've ran out of stuff to do. And so, APOC was definitely made with 4th edition in mind. It doesn't really fit with the 5th edition rule set, so you have to kind of house rule your way through it. You know, one of the big things we did after we tackled the scoring issues was we play with a time limit on the turns. You see APOC games, guys don't like it. They play 2 turns. Whoever went second wins, and... We wanted to get away from that. We wanted to play a 6-7 turn game. And usually we do 15 to 30 minute time limits. And at the end of the time, you finish up the one thing that you were doing. If it was a shooting at a unit, you wrap that up. Or if you were wrapping up one assault, it's done and you move on. And the game flows. You learn to you pick your battles. You know, you don't have to fight the scout team versus the, you know, the guard unit over in the corner of the table. It really doesn't matter in the end of things. And once you play within our rule set, you learn that you got to prioritize stuff. You want to, you know, you want your mega knobs to take out that Titan. Then you,
right,
you move your actions towards that's what's most important, and you do it, and then everything else is secondary.
So it's not like, I mean, to me, Apocalypse was always a really great way to go over to a buddy's house for the day and play this long and detailed game over the course of the day and then leave and go home. But these rules are more suited to be able to show up to your local gaming club or store and play the Apocalypse game in your one gaming night.
Yeah, I mean, you're in and out of there in 5-6 hours. There's nothing wrong with it. Your buddy comes over and you spend 12 hours doing it. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that, but
right, no.
This is when you get 3 people on a side or so, and you know, you just want to get a complete game in.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of hard to knock out an Apocalypse game in a 4-hour gaming session.
We all know that usually, whoever, if you play a short game, whoever's reserves come in last usually wins probably 90% of the time. So we just wanted to get away from that and keep the game moving so it doesn't stall out. I mean, players resisted at first, but once they adapt that play style and, you know, you find that you can usually get a 30-minute time limit, you're wrapping your turns up in 15 minutes and, you know, you're playing 7-8 turns. It's a really fulfilling game at the end. There's a clear-cut victor. You know, it usually comes down to the last die roll of the game.
The way 40K should be.
Exactly.
So are there any models that you know, in a standard 40 or Apocalypse game, you'd always be guaranteed to get out there, but is there anything now, like, you can't even bring it to the table because it doesn't fit?
I don't think we've... I don't think... That's one of those things where the group... You start playing with a group when you play with the same guys that you end up having to police yourself. I mean... There's some stuff that just is downright silly by itself, let alone in mass. Like the Orc Pulsar Rocket, for instance. That thing's pretty retarded. I mean, guy brings three or four of those, and it's like, all right, dude, you can come next time, but if you bring that, don't bother coming type of stuff.
Right.
The Deathstrike Rockets are pretty silly, but you can at least deal with those. The Pulsar Rocket, you have to go first, and you have to blow it up before it launches, or else you're pretty much screwed over for the game. But I don't think we really have limits in that aspect. You know, we just talk and we work through that stuff, and guy does it once, say, oh wow, you know, that was pretty crazy. It's like, okay, let's move on from that.
Right.
If you want to win that bad, okay, you win. Now let's play a real game.
So it's not, so it's the same thing over and over. The club works itself out, and everyone begins to understand what the etiquette of the game when you show up to the table is.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The hardest thing is when, you know, a new guy comes in, he might be a little competitive, and he builds something a little crazy, and usually by the end of the game, they get a feel for what's going on.
Right. You feel that, and I always felt that when I showed up to an Apocalypse game, I played the army I wanted to bring to the table, not the one that would achieve all the objectives. Because frankly, when you and I play Apocalypse, I don't really know what the objectives are going to be nor what the table looks like. I bring the models that I want to see on the board, the unit I want to play around with to see how well it's going to do, and that kind of thing. So these rules and the structure, and now that the group has grown past that and learned to adapt and moved into a normalcy of gaming, is that kind of what's starting to happen?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much how I've always tackled it, and I don't know, looking for words here.
Well, the one thing I do know is that if you want to play with a new unit you've never played before, or put the one model that you've just got done painting, don't ever do it against you, because it won't
last. It's not just me. That's just the way of the 40K table. I mean, that happens to everybody. I mean, I still haven't played a game where my Bombard has done anything just because people are like, that thing looks sick, let's get rid of it.
Right. And then you're like, why the hell did I bother bringing this? Well, and I'll tell you that... And our 40K here that my club finally just got back into 40K after about 2 years of nothing but fantasy. And I finally, for the first time, had a Land Raider survive past turn two. So I'm pretty stoked.
Well, that's good. I mean, usually that armor 14 stuff dies by the first shot or it's there for the entire game.
Yep. Although it helped a lot that my opponent was playing a completely infantry-based Space Wolf army with absolutely no anti-armor. But
so what you're saying is he had no way to deal with it.
Exactly. But you know, I'm gonna take the win when I get it.
Hey man, when you're hungry, you take that half rotten piece of fruit under the tree.
Absolutely. What army are you thinking about playing with for your campaign?
Originally, when I wrote it, I kind of envisioned the guard. And first, the system's pretty open. I mean, you can play whatever army you want that's loyal to your side. You know, you're not married to one army.
But you're married to the side.
You're married to the side, definitely. And I gotta be honest, I broke my Grey Knights out, and I'm having a riot with these guys. And anytime I can get out of old army and not have to add new models to it, I usually have a lot of fun the first couple months.
So yeah, that's a good segue. That's one of the two new things that GW has come out with in the last 30 days. That maybe Grey Knight's been out a little longer than that. That I wanted to talk to you a little bit about. Now on the 40K boards, you are known for not pulling any punches, probably for every internet forum you're a member of. What do you think about Grey Knights?
What do you mean?
Good army, bad army, broken? Are they?
I don't think they're broken, just for the fact that you know, you lose a model, you feel it. So a bad player with a Grey Knight army will probably have a pretty short game. So in my eyes, a broken army is one that you know, you take a bad player that never wins games, and now he's winning games.
So you were saying on the boards that strength finding store bolters with the side bolts should be standard in every Marine army now.
Fluff wise, I mean, just the point is, if we can build a chapter of Marines where everybody has integrated storm bolters into their army, why wouldn't it, you know, why wouldn't the Ultramarines have that?
Right.
I understand the side bolt ammo. There's some little fluff issues there with how they create that stuff, but I'm going to assume that duct taping a storm bolter to your power armor is probably not something unique to Grey Knights.
Right, yeah. So, how did you take your Grey Knight army and revamp all the models, or are you making what you have fit the codex?
Despite what the internets will tell you, Initiative 6 Space Marines with Force Weapons do not suck.
I wouldn't think they would, but I guess that's all the rage, huh?
Yeah, that's what... I just play with what I got. I try to... Usually maybe when a book comes out and I got an army, I might say, hey, Jerry, I'm thinking about changing these guys around. You know, let me play them this way, this game, and see how I like it. You know, a game or two. But I generally like to play with the army that I have, not the army that I want.
Now, are you planning any upgrades to your army based on the Codex, or you like the way it's built right now?
Well, I've been playing it two ways. As an actual Grey Knight army, you know, I bought some Storm Ravens and some Dread Knights because that stuff's cool. Plays good. But really, no changes to the Grey Knight force other than adding, you know, those two models. But the Inquisitor army that that I started playing, that's pretty solid. I'll definitely have to pick up more henchmen. The Death Called Assassin is another one. I think GW's mistake. I mean, the Grey Knight army is supposed to be about these Grey Knights that, you know, are so badass that they go around and kill everybody, including their buddies. And I got a feeling that you're going to start seeing, you know, non-Astarte Grey Knight armies.
Right, the whole monkey army and that kind of thing.
Not necessarily the monkey. I mean, the monkey's 35 points and... With the FAQ, they kind of punish you for taking multiples of them. So the Death Call Assassins are probably the cream of the crop there. The Arcoflagellants, even though they're not the same as they were in the Witch Hunters book, are actually pretty solid.
So I've always felt that the Inquisitor in both the old Grey Knight book, Demon Hunters, and the Witch Hunter book, Inquisitor was always just kind of a pointless choice to take, very overpriced for what he could accomplish. And I'll admit, I haven't actually read the Codex straight through yet. I've been focused on doing my first ever standard Codex Marine chapter. I've always done variants, and I'm actually trying to break the mold of all my Space Marine armies. Instead of a standard foot army with a few tanks and transports, I'm trying to go to a more mechanized, heavy armored force. So I've been focused on trying to read that, but Inquisitors, you're saying that they're pretty solid, they're a good army, so is it other than kind of ruining the fluff of a Grey Knight's codex and taking a human army, the Inquisitor is a pretty good choice to do.
Well, I don't think there's another codex out there that allows you to take two HQs for 50 points and not needing to take any upgrades. I mean, their stuff's already baked in. You can upgrade them, but if you just go with the minimum, there's 50 points of HQ, two slots.
And he's pretty solid the way he is?
I wouldn't say that he's solid in game-breaking, but he fills the one that you're required in. And leaves lots of points for other stuff. But the named guys are actually pretty solid. The Throne of Judgment, Karamazov, on paper looks pretty silly, but I started using them in a couple games because I've had the model and only ever used it once. And have you read the Orbital Bombardment rules?
Yes.
They have a strength 10 AP 1 5-inch blast that is never reduced for the circle not being on something.
Right.
And Karamazov can nuke his own guys and the thing doesn't scatter. I mean, it's pretty sweet. You get a 4-point guardsman or whatever or something in there, like the Calidus Assassin I discovered in the last game I played is like, wow, she can deploy an inch away from a unit. Nuke her. She's got stealth, 3+ cover save versus the shot.
Let it go.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good good way to hunt Land Raiders. Your armor 12 against it because it's a lance shot. You know, so it's weird stuff in there like that you can do. That he's relentless, so I assume he can move and shoot it still. And he's pretty good. Tokis, however you pronounce his name. You take him to get the henchmen as troops. What I've been doing is putting him with a unit of Death Cult and a Storm Raven. They'll get out to assault something. He'll get out to go somewhere else by himself and draw that 10-1 blast.
Yeah.
It's crazy, but in two games, he's survived the blast twice. One for a lack of wound and one for I'm going to go to ground and make a 6+ save.
He'll never die that way, huh?
I wouldn't count on him living too much with that. That's the extreme.
So let's talk something a little bit more controversial. GW came out is planned on getting rid of all their metal blisters, going to a resin mix, not quite Forge World, something a little bit more plasticky. But as everyone knows, and it's all the rage on for the last few weeks, the fine cast stuff. Personally, me, I think it's great simply because now I don't have 50-pound models in my case anymore, and on the table, and most of the time, I always shied away from an army or a certain model because I didn't want to mess with the metal. My metal models, the arms would always fall off, or I just didn't want to deal with the cleaning and the pinning and all the work that came from it. I was careful in choosing what metal models I included. Now, Finecast comes along, and some models have just jumped out to me. For instance, my Orc and Goblin army for Fantasy, as Hag the Slaughterer, now becomes a nice model to get. And so does, for the Space Marine Army I'm working on, I bought Marnius Calgar and the Honor Guard. I don't have any of those hang-ups anymore. How do you feel about the fine cast?
Well, first, I'm glad you brought this up, because I know you've always been asking guys to keep scores, because you're Mr. Anti-Rumor Man. But just here's the score for you. GW discontinued metals, said the rumor was they were going to resin. Okay, score 1 for the rumor, guys. That one came true.
Yeah, well, and I'll tell you, all my sources that confirm or deny rumors to me, told me when the Finecast app actually released, they looked at me and said, I was completely lied to by our management. And they're a little upset because GW, if you don't know, listeners don't know, GW's corporation professes honesty to its employees and up and down the chain of command. So there's some people out there that are a little upset that they were lied to a little, but so what? it happens when you want to keep a secret or you want to have some plausible deniability. But yes, I do generally think that we believe too many in rumors, although I'll admit the rumors have been very accurate in the last year or so.
Well, let's just mark that as two then for the rumor guys, because rumors for years have been that GW employees do not know what they're talking about.
All except that's not true. That's not true. The black shirts always did. When they had the red and black shirts, the black shirts were always let in on things about 6 to 7 months out. Red shirts, 3 months. But that's all changed now that they got rid of red shirts. So anything goes at this point.
Before we get too far off topic, that actually, it fits the bill that they were lied to, because apparently GW has gone the route of, we're not going to tell you anything until you see it on the back cover of White Dwarf.
Yeah.
That's their new policy. They, think they hung out with Steve Jobs at a little, motivational speak or something. And, they're just changing their marketing, strategy a little bit, which whatever, I have no problems with it. The stuff's still going to leak. So who cares?
Well, we'll talk about rumors, 'cause you're a good one to have that discussion with. You're a lively argumentative individual.
Well, let's wrap up Finecast first.
Yeah.
Finecast, I think, is wonderful. I mean, 10 years ago, maybe even 15, it used to be, I want a completely metal army.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I want all metal Chaos Space Marines, or, you know, that was the goal. But since GW's stepped up to the plate and made the good plastic models, it's definitely gone the other way, where the goal was not to have any metal models in your army. So the resin's cool. I like it. So it costs $1 more a blister. I don't really care. It's like, how many Mephistons do I need in my army? You know, if I want one, it's not required. If I want one, it costs $1 more to have them in resin.
And if you have them in metal, no one said you had to replace it.
Exactly. The old metal ones that are being cleared out of shops now for a discount do the exact same thing as the resin ones. So the guys that are crying over $1 have their avenue of approach there.
It's not like they made the super mega Mephiston and he's now 350 points. So if you want that model with these new powers, you got to buy the resin one.
My biggest issue is the resin seems a little soft, and you know, a lot of us like to not take our armies out of the car.
Wow. Here you were talking about phones ringing during the podcast.
Well, unlike you, I'm actually at work right now. So, yeah, anyways, the models melting in the car could possibly be an issue. It's the plastic ones will.
Well, with some of my club members, we actually found another problem with it. And it might only be a few models, but for instance, one of the guys was painting an orc on a boar.
Mm-hmm.
And as he's brushing it, the model wobbles because it is that soft.
Okay.
It is flexible. So as he's trying to brush paint on it, the model's going, doing the whole movement thing, waving around. So he's had to adjust his brushing technique while he's painting this stuff. But you probably won't find that on all the models, just a couple that have some weaker joints or a little more flexible than others.
So just real quick before we wrap this up, all that Honor Guard box said that you bought?
Yeah.
Was the fact that those guys were all pretty much one-piece metals, you were afraid your arms and stuff were going to break off?
It was Marnius I was more worried about. And oddly enough, in the resin, the Honor Guard are like multi-piece.
Yeah, I think, their axes or swords or whatever, separate.
Right, yep. Yep.
One thing for sure with that box set is, if you ever want an Honor Guard in another army, now is the time to do it, because those guys will get those Ultramarine symbols off of there pretty easy with the resin.
And that's, I'm doing that because I'm using that as my chapter master for the Howling Griffins that I'm working on. There are a lot more Ultramarine symbols on there than you would think, especially on the banner.
Yeah, I went down that road with the medals and about halfway through, so that I don't even care anymore. That was a wasted $50.
But it does. It did take me. I mean, granted, you can't do it on the metal, but it did take me 30 minutes on the with the resin. So it is done. It's just don't think it's just a couple here and there. That banner has a lot. And there, once you start working on it, you begin to see a lot more on the canvas, so to speak.
All right, so back to rumors. Score 3 for the rumor, guys. The Sisters of Battle will be in the White Dwarf in August.
All right, first of all, let me make my case why I am so against rumors, or it seems to be that way, more than I can do in text. If you don't know me personally or know me for a long time, I am naturally argumentative. I resist anything that does not consider the possibility of something else. If you're saying this is absolute, I tend to just go, all right, no, it's not. And try to prove it at least logically that there is another possibility. And for so many years, rumors have always been considered the all of everything. And I've even seen times, even on the Fight Club, where we'll make a statement of fact that this is the rumor that's true and then change it during the thread. Never acknowledging that, yeah, we were slightly wrong in this, and here's where it's been adjusted. So I've always thought that it would be an interesting concept, and no, I don't have the skills to do it, to stand up a webpage, track rumors when they come in, like let's take Sisters of Battle when it was first announced, that this is what it is. Maybe even put down where it originated from. And then show how that rumor changes over time. Because just like a good fortune teller, make enough predictions and they'll eventually come true.
Jerry, believe it or not, that already exists. It's called Warseer. If you check out the rumor threads right there, there'll be 40 pages of that rumor changing from its original concept.
So they do track it? I've never been to Warseer.
They don't track it specifically, but it's all there already in the thread.
Yeah, but do they call somebody out and say, no, look, you were wrong, you've always been wrong, stop making a rumor prediction?
What's the point of it?
Well, because here's where I think we'll end up finding out. We would end up finding out that it's a handful of individuals that are starting rumors and that are generally accurate. And I'm willing to bet we'll be able to track down in this large community whether or not these are like GW employees or consistently the same people all the time that are starting and confirming rumors.
Well, back to Warseer, when Brimstone was alive, I mean, when that guy confirmed something that was reported as a rumor, I mean, it was set in stone at that point. It was as good as you had the codex in your hand. So, I don't know. That's what always made me laugh was when you would go on your little tangents about rumors and, you know, that guy who was like Moses, like scribing the tablets and stuff that... I mean, what he said was the gospel, and it came to, you know, it ended up being true, and it was funny just how you'd always...
But there's always a difference between Sisters of Battle are coming out in August, for example, versus they're coming out in August, and here's all the details.
Well, that's what's on the net right now,
So is the rumor...
When's the August White Dwarf come out next month?
Hold on. So is the rumor correct... Or is it wrong if the Sisters of Battle come out in August, and yet the contents of it are completely not what the rumor said? Is the rumor right or wrong? Or is it just half accurate?
Well, the thing is like everything, stuff evolves. I mean, this close to the actual release, I would have to assume that the rumors that we're just now getting are probably spot on because...
Production and everything else.
Yeah,
right.
You know, the White Dwarf's probably already printed, right?
They're printed about 3 or 4 months out.
So, and really, the schematics of it haven't come out until last Sunday. So, I would say that the rumors are probably pretty spot on at this point.
And I don't disagree. The closer it gets, and again, I always pick the side just to be argumentative about it. To at least in my mind satisfy some cosmic imbalance logically. But I don't disagree that maybe Sisters are coming. It's well overdue. I mean, I'm waiting for it, and I'm trying to save my pennies to build an army that way. But I don't really feel like the rumors, what the codex are going to be is accurate. Don't disagree it's coming out, but I disagree what's going to be in it.
Think about it like this. You've you've probably worked your entire life, and
I've been with the government, so maybe not.
Your boss tells you on Friday next week, this is what we're gonna do, and you talk to your coworkers and stuff. Say, all right, this is what we're gonna do. And then on Monday, that plan's out the window. You're going in a total different direction. That doesn't mean what you were going to do on Friday wasn't true on Friday.
Yeah, true. That's a true statement.
So, I mean, if I got a playtest copy of the Necrons, 6 months ago, and I told you, hey, Monolith's going to be armor 15 and ignores all glancing hits, period. That's what it says. I mean, it's true. Will it make it into the final cut? Probably not. But if you go and tell your buddies at a GW store and they post on the internet that they heard from a guy who has a reliable source, by the time it comes out, it's not true anymore, but it was at one point.
Right, right. No, it's true. And secretively, I tend to believe the rumors about 30 to 60 days out from a release. Because, like you said, that you're kind of locked in at that point. I still have doubts as to content because we don't know if our source has gotten like that playtest codex and didn't get an update after that. But I don't disagree. Sisters are coming. It's like I said. It's what isn't it the oldest army list I still got?
I think they might have been the last third edition book release.
Yeah, so that it would make them the oldest codex, unless Necrons.
I don't remember if Necrons came out in
third or fourth. In any case,
regardless, if they drop in November like the rumors say they will, then that's tied up. Templars are the last one.
It's entirely possible because Jervis with the Dark Angels and Blood Angels challenged the dev team to be able to drop more than one codex in a year, and now that it's proven to be done, they're going to do it again at some point. I mean, it's without a doubt.
I think there's a rush to get rid of the third edition codexes. That way they can push the sixth edition, get interest going in the game, like an edition release does, and
get all the books to a level that they're common, at least at fifth edition.
That way they can get another Marine book out and
make us all feel better. All right, so that's a great segue. As I've been asking people here over the last time until the 6th edition is finally released, what are your 6th edition predictions?
That there will be one.
And that's it. See, there we go with the rumor. That's pretty much it. You're not even willing to venture a guess at what rule changes are going to be made.
It's because there's not any rumors for it. It's just people speculating. I mean, to me, the game plays fine. I thought it played fine last edition. I thought it played fine in edition before. I mean, I'll play 6th edition. It'll look a lot like the previous edition, and I'll miss some stuff in the opening year or two.
So are you just, do you have any changes that you want them to make? Any speculations you want to make? Or is it, yeah, whatever, I'll take it?
I would like...
Well, I'll give you mine. Maybe that'll spark something. I want them to get rid of this true line of sight. Believers in true line of sight are those people that never played 3rd edition, nor 2nd edition. True line of sight sucks.
I personally like it. I mean, true line of sight has actually always been in the game.
To some extent, yeah.
For all extents, except for if you're 100% completely behind area terrain, then you didn't have true line of sight. The rest of the game was definitely true line of sight.
Again, you're true. That's correct. But I don't like how, oh my gosh, I can see your hand sticking up over the edge. Or people who don't realize that line of sight is reciprocal. If I can see you, you can see me.
See, I don't, that's totally not the case. If line of sight is taken from, if a guy has a toughness, the rule book says you check line of sight from his view. So you're checking from his head. Okay, so if you're on different levels, you can have an instance where maybe a guy on the lower level can see the guy's legs. The guy on the top of the level can't see anything. So if you played Necromunda, you will definitely see why I see you, you see me isn't always true.
So what's your speculation? Or your wishes?
I don't have any speculations other than it'll definitely be here eventually. I miss Entanglement. I thought Entanglement was a cool rule. Target Priority to me was cool. Anything that brings a little depth to the game, it slows it down a little bit. I think right now the game's pretty fast. It plays pretty fast. You know, stuff's in your face pretty quick, and it's hard to recover from it. So I think maybe some sort of Entanglement might bring balance back.
So you heard it here, folks. First, a complete non-committal answer for the first time by Global Smack. All right. Well, we're coming closer to the end. Now, one of the problems I'm going to have with this podcast after making a promise to somebody in the first one is I might not be able to fulfill it till later. The first two episodes I recorded in about 2 days, or a period of 2 days while I was on travel for work, so I wasn't able to complete it. But Hornblower, this one's for you. We've got a new review up on iTunes. Like I said, it's a 5-star by Lehman Russ, or actually what he calls himself is Lemon. Lemon Russ, he says, a great voice for the community. What a fantastic addition to what was already one of the best Warhammer 40K communities around. Fight Night's fun approach to the hobby is enjoyable to listen to, and obvious depth of experience shared by the hosts offer terrific insight into the 40K wargaming. I sit on the edge of my seat for the prophet to share his vast, long experience with the Blood Angels and how owning them for half his life has sculpted him into the man he has become. The Librarian is a fantastic host and moderator and keeps the pace of the podcast moving. His questions often take the host down entertaining paths. Hold on a moment. The blood is rushing to my ego. Okay, and he ends the review by saying, great podcast. So thanks, Lemon Russ. I do think you need to figure out how to spell your name more correctly. But thanks for the review. And anybody else that posts a 5-star review, we will go ahead and read them here on the podcast as well.
Can you, in all honesty, actually spell your own name wrong? I mean, if that's how we spelled it, isn't that kind of how it is?
Maybe. I guess maybe you're correct in that assessment. So that's it. That's all we've got now, unless you got some fly-by-night topics you want to bring up.
I was really hoping that you would bring out the paid entertainment this time. There's that stand-up comic that you pay to keep on staff. He's got those witty one-liners that kind of go over yeah. Everybody's heads.
You know, I don't know if I wanted to bring him back. He might come back for a future episode.
Where's that guy at? How much do you pay him?
I don't pay him anything for that, believe it or not.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's all free work. Free work.
All right, well, while we're on and the word free is being spoken, let's pimp the campaign one more time. It's the Hunt for Jander Hope. It's mainly going on at Pandemonium Games, but you can put something together. You can run it elsewhere as well. That's fine. We're on Facebook at the Hunt for Jander Hope.
And I hear you got a
40K campaign.
I hear you got a pretty cool movie trailer for it now too.
Yeah, cool. I mean, it's there. I don't know if cool is the correct adjective to describe it. I mean, there was effort there, and I don't think anybody's actually watched it other than yourself and myself.
Nice.
But it's cool. I'm just messing with you. But remember, check us out on Facebook and check out the blog 40K Armageddon. There's definitely news there. Check out the Fight Club as always. Probably we'd still be doing the Yahoo thing if it wasn't for the Fight Club. So let's definitely, give those guys a shout. And if you're a member there and you look at it once a week, twice a week, use it every day, you're on 12 hours a day, whatever. Those guys are bonus. It's the cheapest forum to support at $6 a year. And I think $6 a year for an hour of your, life a week entertainment is well worth it. So
what's that? What, not going to Starbucks for 2 days?
Maybe one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely check out the Fight Club. see what everybody's doing. Check out the blog, 40K Armageddon. Check us out on Facebook, the campaigns, the Hunt for Gender Hope 40K campaign. We're on Twitter as well. And that's it, man. All check right. us out.
Thanks a lot. This is the librarian saying, shut up, roll the dice.
And roll some sixes.
Visit us on the web at www.40kfightclub.com. That's www.40kfightclub.com or .com.